My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome the senior fellows from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, Bill Raggio and Tom Joslin, reporting for the Long War Journal, the chronicle, the diary, the observation, the analysis of the vast canvas of the Ummah and the jihadists who are disrupting life as we understand it, from West Africa to the Hindu Kush, from the Mediterranean to India, to the subcontinent. We begin, however, with a measure of a man from the United States. His name is Khalilzad, and his participation over many years, but particularly during the latter stages of the Trump administration and the early days of the Biden administration, in negotiating with the Taliban or representatives of parts of the Taliban in Doha, Qatar. Khalilzad is now commenting about the success and failure of his negotiations, in particular, who is to fault for the tragedy of the withdrawal, the exit from Afghanistan, leaving behind tens of thousands of human beings, men and women and children, who are prey to the Taliban because over the last 20 years they cooperated or were said to work for or had a relative who worked for or said something positive about ISAF, about the United States, about democracy. Tom, I begin with you because you have posted in Dispatch your measure of Khalilzad's explanation. Who is Khalilzad, and what is his explanation for the tragedy of August just passed? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, Zalmay Khalilzad is a veteran diplomat who's worked on Iraq and Afghanistan. He's been in Washington circles for many years, certainly throughout the entire 9/11 period on and off. He's played a role diplomatically for the U.S., I think you'd be hard pressed to find any successes that he could tout during that time period. But, you know, he sort of is one of these Washington creatures that exists in that sort of being there mode. If you remember the movie Being There with Peter Sellers and sort of the satire of the Washington political establishment, you know, Zalmay Khalilzad is one of these guys who just being there has been enough to keep him in the game and keep him active in Washington circles. And when it comes to the negotiations with the Taliban, he was called upon in 2018 to lead the Trump administration's negotiations with the Taliban. Bill and I knew at that time, we said so publicly, and I wrote very forcefully at the time, that that was it. That's spell the death knell for the Afghan government, because Khalilzad really had no interest in anything that we would call peace, that he was basically there to just sort of negotiate an American withdrawal. And that's what he did. And he's trying to dress that up now and say that he accomplished that all the problems we've witnessed in Afghanistan, the quick collapse of the Afghan government, which is, you know, there are multiple causes of that, of course, not just him. But all these problems we've seen over in Afghanistan over the last year, that they really have nothing to do with him or his diplomacy, that it really was just the fault of the Afghan government. And, you know, look, nobody's going to rise to the defense of now deposed Afghan President Ashraf Ghani. His term was a failure. There's no doubt about it. But it's also no doubt that Khalilzad's diplomacy with the Taliban paved the way for the Taliban's swift advances this year. Really, he was the chief enabler of the Taliban. He did nothing to negotiate on behalf of the Afghan government, which he basically helped depose them, really, when you look at his diplomacy in terms of freeing Taliban al-Qaeda prisoners who returned to the battlefield, cutting the Afghan government out of talks with the Taliban and delegitimizing it. Basically, you know, lying on behalf of the Taliban, which he continues to do. And so right now what's happening is he's going on TV and he's making these appearances, including on the Sunday morning shows, you know, trying to defend his track record. And as I say in the piece that I wrote that you referenced, John, it's really just self-serving piffle.
Bill, I recall our many conversations about the negotiations in Doha. And the puzzle always presented was the Ghani government or any representative of the Kabul government were never invited, and that was a condition or maybe just a guideline that the Taliban insisted upon. It never made any sense. Did it? And I recall you calling attention to it all the time. These are two-party talks. The U.S. looking to get out the door and Taliban looking to get in the door. What is your measure now about how Khalilzad permitted that to go forward and didn't call the talks off unless and until the Ghani government was at the table?
Yeah, and this should have been a non-starter from the beginning. You know, Tom and I warned about this time and time again. Excluding the Ghani government, the Afghan government from direct negotiations would lead to failure. And we've been proven right on this. I mean, I don't think you needed to be a genius to figure this out. The Taliban believed that the Ghani government, that the Afghan government was merely a puppet of the U.S., of the West. And so the Taliban refused to renegotiate with that puppet and said, no, we'll go right to the top. The irony in all of this is that by the U.S. excluding the Afghan government, they proved the Taliban to be correct. And so the Taliban, once they get, this is why their entire strategy, was based on getting the U.S. to leave. If it wanted to restore the Islamic Emirate, it would get the U.S. to leave the country. To do that, it would negotiate directly with the U.S. And then it would never, in good faith, negotiate with the Afghan government. So, you know, you didn't need to be, again, you didn't need to be, have a master's or a doctorate in foreign policy and in political theory to understand what the Taliban were doing. Khalilzad and the rest of the U.S. foreign policy establishment were so smart. They were so smart that only they could not understand what the Taliban was doing and what the Taliban achieved here. So, you know, Khalilzad's attempts to turn this back on the Afghan government, he already neutered them by refusing to let them participate in negotiations. And then he's going to sit and turn and say the Afghan government didn't negotiate with the Taliban. The Taliban never wanted a ceasefire. It didn't agree to a ceasefire after the U.S. withdrawal. It went for the win because it knew that the Afghan government was weak and on the ropes.
Tom, it's called magical thinking. That's a popular metaphor. Did Khalilzad lead the magical thinking that the Taliban was going to in some way be domesticated? Or was he following the lead of the Trump administration and then the Biden administration? Can we tell?
You know, John, this is the way I'd put it. There's a documentary called Made You Look, which is about one of the great art scandals in New York City over the last decade or so, last two decades. It's a great documentary I would recommend everyone to watch. And one of the chief figures in that documentary, at one point, this reporter is talking about her and says either she was complicit in this and totally involved, or she was too stupid, basically, for her position. And that's basically an incompetent. That's basically what you end up with Khalilzad. He's either complicit in it and knows exactly what he's doing, or he's too stupid for his role, his job and all this. Either explanation is a bad one. But let's make it very easy here. What Bill said is exactly right, and something we've said over and over again. The Taliban very loudly claimed and said over and over and over again that they were fighting to resurrect the Islamic Emirate in Afghanistan. Well, why is that important? Well, Khalilzad now, even now, is going on TV and pretending that there was a political settlement to be had between the Afghan government and the Taliban, and he blames Ghani and the now deposed Afghan government for failing to reach his political settlement. Well, that's a non-starter. Why? Because the Taliban said from the beginning it wasn't going to reach a political settlement with Kabul. So why is it that Khalilzad is still repeating this lie or this dishonest talking point at this late date? Either he's still lying on behalf of the Taliban and pretending the Taliban was reasonable actor here, or I'm sorry, an actor that was actually interested in peace, which of course they weren't, or he doesn't know this. Well, here's the thing. I pointed out in my piece, the agreement that he signed with the Taliban is still up at the State Department's website. You can download it. You can see it in one of the links in my piece. And in that agreement, the Taliban over and over again refers to itself as Islamic Emirate Afghanistan, which, as Bill and I have explained many, many times, is their totalitarian regime, which was overthrown in 2001. And the State Department very clumsily says in that agreement they don't recognize it, but the Taliban insisted on calling itself that throughout the entire time of talking with the U.S. And in other words, they weren't hiding this, John. They weren't pretending that they really wanted a political process with Kabul. They were saying what they were all about all along. And you really had to be either complicit in that with the Taliban and their goals, or really too incompetent for your role.
Bill, my memory also is that in the back and forth in Doha, there was often talk of releasing prisoners held at Bagram Air Base, as I remember. And the idea was the prisoners would be released, but there was no quo for the quid. Do I remember correctly? And were those prisoners released? Were they part of the Taliban offensive, or were they the ones that were let out of jail by the Taliban offensive? I can't recall.
Yes, so you're absolutely correct. So again, that negotiation was directly between the U.S. and the Taliban, but the then Afghan government was the one holding the prisoners at Bagram. They had all been transferred to Afghan control. So the U.S. forced the Afghan government, pressured and Khalsi played a major role in shaming the Ghani regime and pressuring them to release those Taliban prisoners. And yes, you're absolutely correct. A large number of them, including Taliban commanders, were, once they were released, they returned back to the fold. I remember at one point I saw the number being around 30-40% of the 5,000. So you're talking thousands of fighters going back into the Taliban ranks. And that was only the knowns. These are the ones they could tell that went back. I would guess that number was probably approaching 100%. Those Taliban fighters were, unless they were injured or really broken, they were eager to get back into the fight.
And Tom, just the final remark before we turn to Afghanistan today and the stories about ISIS. Final remark, is Washington's measure that the tragedy we saw in August was avoidable if these negotiations had gone in a more logical fashion, or was it always going to come to this no matter what Khalilzad did or did not say?
Yeah, I don't think there's any logical or coherent argument that Washington can offer for any of this other than this process directly enabled and led to the Taliban's swift takeover of the country this year, and that they should have seen it coming. What I would say about the chaotic withdrawal this year is it disproves actually a big part of the State Department and Khalilzad's talking points to the public. The one thing that he'll point to is say, well, the U.S. Beginning in February of 2020 through the middle of this year, basically they needed Khalilzad's deal with the Taliban in order to prevent the Taliban from attacking the U.S. And because they didn't attack the U.S., the deal was a success. But actually, it's disproven if you look at what happened this year. The U.S. actually missed the withdrawal date given in Khalilzad's deal with the Taliban of May 1st. The Biden administration got the Taliban, for the most part, to hold off on attacking and launching offensives against the Americans for several months because the Taliban knew that the U.S. was still leaving. And that's what the Biden administration said. In other words, the Taliban was always willing to allow, for the most part, the U.S. to just leave without attacking. They were going to secure the retreat of the American NATO forces. It's not some major diplomatic achievement to say, well, hey, I got them to watch us retreat. No, they were always willing to watch us retreat. And there's still questions, obviously, about the attack at the airport that happened in August, and there are other sort of minor examples. But for the most part, the Taliban was just willing to watch the U.S. and NATO retreat. And Khalilzad doesn't have much of a talking point or any talking point really there that makes any sense either.
I am speaking with Tom Joslin and Bill Rojo of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy's Long War Journal. They are senior fellows discussing what was Khalilzad, the Trump and Biden administration negotiation with bad actors. We turn to now what is ISIS in Afghanistan, and is it a credible threat? Is it dragging a Taliban into a contest that it is not equipped to fight? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. 1. It's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it.
Are you playing me off?
That's what's happening, right? Okay. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer, first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.